But let's welcome Andy Pierce to the show. Andy, welcome back.
Hello, friends.
You've been here. You were here before.
Just a little while ago.
Just 11 years ago.
Only 11 years ago.
Yeah, 11 years on the show. And you are one of the – by the way, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And you are one of the co-founders of the Friends of the Uptown Theater. And on Wednesday, you will be hosting a lecture.
Yes, looking forward to it.
On the Uptown Theater. And people can come and check that out. So tell us a little bit about, first of all, the Friends of the Uptown Theater, how that started. And then we're going to talk about the history of the Uptown. And I know you know all about that, and we want to get into it. But tell me about the Friends of the Uptown Theater.
Sure, and stop me when I bore you. One of the really interesting things about the Uptown Theater is that people were volunteering there even before it closed. So as early as like 1977, people were helping out after hours to clean the place up, keep it in good condition, and keep it open. By the time it closed in 1981, you had folks who kept their eyes on it, would go in, try to keep it from freezing up and flooding and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. When I met longtime volunteers in 1998, I was fascinated. You know, here is this closed movie palace. Everybody wonders what's going to happen to it, what's going on with it, and just a handful of people were keeping an eye on it.
Yeah.
So I said, hey, I'd like to be on your mailing list. And they said, mailing list, that's a good idea.
So didn't even have a mailing list at that point.
I knew there was something I could do to help.
Yeah.
One of my best friends and mentors said, well, track those who share the interest. And that's what I've been able to do with email list and Facebook.
Yeah. And I'm sure social media has made this a lot easier, you know.
It has, but you also find out that everyone is an expert, right? So a lot of times you help them realize that maybe what they've heard about the Uptown isn't true,
yeah,
that it's not as in bad shape as they think or say, and that it's not undoable.
Yeah, you know, but it's going to cost a lot of money.
It will cost money.
Yeah, it will cost a lot of money. So the Uptown Theater opened in 1925, correct? And 4,300 seats in the auditorium, unbelievable staircases in the opening in the lobby, and it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous theater, or at least it was in its heyday.
It really is, and even today when you walk in, she looks really good.
Yeah.
And this Spanish Baroque, Spanish Renaissance style is something the architects used here, not before, not after, and they really did it right. You know, everywhere you look, there's a little turn, a little twist that's unusual.
Yeah, yeah. I used to go there when I was a kid to see movies. I never saw a concert there, but I did see movies. I remember specifically... but I saw The Iger Sanction with Clint Eastwood at the Uptown Theater. I remember that specifically. But at that time, it's weird because, you know, back in those days, I kind of took it for granted because there were a ton of movie palaces that were around. I mean, and they were in, you know, some of them were in bad shape and they were kind of grindhouses at that point. But all of my, you know, sort of childhood teenage years going to movies, they were all in those loop palaces. And so I didn't really go in and appreciate how beautiful the Uptown Theater was because I was going to the Chicago Theater and the State Lake and the Roosevelt, the Oriental, and all the other theaters.
Well, I cheated tonight, Nick. I listened to our conversation from 2006.
Oh, my God.
You mentioned those theaters. You also mentioned the Portage.
Yes.
Was the Portage your neighborhood house?
No, the neighborhood house for me was the Davis, which just went through an incredible redesign.
Yes.
But the Davis was the one that was in my neighborhood. There were a lot of them. We got to take a break for the news. But when we come back, we'll talk. Oh, no, we got a couple of minutes to talk. What am I looking at? Cool. I was looking at the wrong clock. But I used to go to a lot of the neighborhood theaters. You know, let's see. Like the Davis was the one that I would walk to. And I lived right next to the Brown Line. So we would take the L to the Loop and go to every. I've been to every one of the big, you know, downtown theaters. At one point or another.
Do you remember the State Lake?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I saw tons of movies at the State Lake. I remember The Loop, which was right next to the State Lake on the other side. The McVickers, the Woods. That's where all the Bond movies played, was at the Woods. The United Artists, the Oriental, the Roosevelt, Michael Todd. I remember I went to all of those theaters.
Nice. Which one played the art films that Roger Ebert used to talk about?
There was the Fine Arts. But there was one that was the one on Chicago Avenue. Oh man, it's on Chicago. It was on Chicago, and Michigan. It was where the Walgreens is now.
Yeah.
On that corner, it was east of that Walgreens on, and I can't remember the name of the theater. Yeah. So, but I went to all of them. I mean, that was where I grew up, you know, going to those theaters. I miss that. People don't know, you know, they don't have the experience of that stuff, you know?
Not at all.
We got the Music Box, you know. Portage is, you know, they still show movies every once in a while. And the patio up by my parents' house. My parents live right around the corner from the patio. And they're, you know, they're trying to keep that place going as well.
And to think that people would fill the cinemas for three shows a day.
Yeah.
And I'm showing Nick a picture here of the Chicago Theater just
that's
full.
That's beautiful.
That's not a special event or, you know, that's just a movie.
That's just a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible. And like the experience now of going to a movie, and I sound like an old man, but it's just like you go to, you go to a mall or you go to, not even a mall, you go to the multiplex, there's 27 different screens and it's, you know. It's fine, you know. Like, the technology now is great, and you know, but just that experience of going. People used to dress up to go to the movies. It was a big deal, like for kids, and especially in the '50s and the '40s and the '60s. Like, it was a big deal. You'd put on your Sunday best, and you would go, and you'd look at this beautiful, giant, you know, auditorium and these beautiful theaters, and it's just
sure. And if the movie was bad or the show was bad, you had the theater to look at.
Yeah,
and laughter is contagious. You know, if you're in there with this many people.
Yeah.
And a laugh breaks out, or there's a really funny scene, or there's a really sad scene, you all share it.
It's amazing that you could, you know, like you could, the concept of seeing a movie with 3,000 people is insane. You know, I mean, now what do you get, 250, 300 seats in a theater? Something like that?
Usually much smaller.
Yeah.
It's gone back to where the technology started, the Nickelodeon, the small room.
That's right.
It really went full circle.
Yeah.
But if
you
go to Navy Pier IMAX or you go to Radio City Music Hall, you get the feeling that you got when you were a kid.
Absolutely. All right, hang on a second. This is Andy Pierce. He is one of the co-founders of the Friends of the Uptown Theater. We're going to talk about more about the Uptown Theater and what might happen to it in the future. And also, you can check out the lecture Wednesday, the February 22nd, and we'll tell you all about the details on that. News is coming up. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribb Tower. And Andy Pierce is my guest, and he is one of the co-founders of the Friends of the Uptown Theater. And on Wednesday, February 22nd, the Chicago Architecture Foundation is going to host a lecture on the Uptown Theater. It's $5 to the public, and it's going to be at the CFA, which is at 224 South Michigan Avenue. And it's open to the public, correct?
Yes.
Okay, tell everybody what we just heard.
That is the one and only recording of the Uptown Theater Wurlitzer organ. That was recorded as they were removing the instrument in 1963. That's Freddie Arnish, a roller rink organist.
Mm-hmm.
They brought it in, they set up their tape recorder, they recorded it, and they started removing it. But it's the only known recording.
The only known recording, of the organ in the Uptown Theater. They took it out in 63?
Yes.
Okay. Talk about the history of the Uptown Theater. We mentioned before the break that it did open in 1925. How did the building begin? What started at the Uptown?
Many of your listeners might be familiar with Balaban and Katz if they're Chicagoans. Outside of Chicago, you might not know Balaban and Katz, but you might know that it later became a part of Paramount Pictures, ABC Great States. I'm probably not doing all of that correctly in the lineage of Balaban and Katz, but essentially you had the folks from the Jewish West Side who formed this corporation and started building theaters.
Mm.
And, you know, one theater led to another. By 1925, they had enough money to build the Uptown Theater at Broadway and Lawrence, and it is one of the largest remaining movie palaces in the world.
Yeah.
So...
And it opened in 25.
Yes.
And it hosted movies and live performances, correct?
Right. It's kind of hard to believe that you had this big a building for movies, but it was built for stage show, organ, orchestra, and the silent film.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't just go to the movie and get a film. You got all of this other entertainment.
Right.
And the live shows were planned in consideration of the feature. So if you had a Klondike Adventure film, then you would have something in the stage show that was wintry or Klondike Great North.
Yeah.
Same thing with the music. A full orchestra there in the pit performing the music with the organ for the film.
Mm-hmm.
And
a full orchestra. That's amazing.
Full orchestra.
Yeah.
You know, I think the list there shows 131 employees at the Uptown Theater when it opened. The theater itself could be manipulated to reflect the theme of the show or the mood of the movie. So you're in the auditorium and there's all this cove lighting. You might have purple for a love scene. You might have blue for night. You might have red for war. And it was this full sensory experience because the lights in the theater were reflecting what was going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And talk about the owners and how that over the years, who owned it and how did that happen?
Well, you know, you have Balaban and Katz and their various iterations. And later you might know Plitt Theaters.
Sure.
Plitt Theaters owned it toward the end. And then you had some operators. The Rabiella family did Spanish language film by day and rock and roll shows by night and weekend. It closed in 81, and those very cold winters were not kind to a theater that was unheated.
Yeah.
So storm drains that drain the roofs would freeze and break open is what damaged the plaster. And that was back when we were children, right?
Yeah.
Very young.
Yeah.
In the early 80s. So it fell to the hands of a notorious tax sale buyer. You may remember Lou Wolf mm-hmm. and Ken Goldberg, who owned a number of large commercial properties, including the Granada. The through the years, various different owners, and some were real estate guys that, you know, thought they could make a buck. But really, I don't think anyone has ever had any intent to do anything other than entertainment. And it now has an owner through an LLC that is very much interested in entertainment.
Right. And now, how long has it been closed since 81?
81.
And and how often have you guys gone in, or how many other people to go in and just kind of, you know, up to keep it up?
I would say, you know, between the volunteers and the owner's staff, you know, someone is there almost all the time mm-hmm. checking on things, particularly in the winter with heat. And then there's ongoing stabilization. So there are, you know, licensed contractors, masons, architects, engineers, doing their thing to keep the building stable.
Yeah, you know, there's an interesting article that I read about how everything is so happening in Wrigleyville right now. You know, and you know, the Cubs just won the World Series. They did an incredible job. You know, updating Wrigley Field. And the neighborhood is going to completely change within the next couple of years. And that's going to bring a lot of people to that area. But how is that going to affect the Uptown area? It could probably affect it negatively, correct? Because everybody's going to be going there. And there's this beautiful Lawrence and Broadway could very well be, you know, like Times Square or like what Wrigleyville is now and going to be even more. Because you got the Riviera right there, you got the Aragon Ballroom right there, and you get the Green Mill, for God's sake, and there's so many great places in that area. Will it affect? Do you think that this regeneration of Wrigleyville is going to affect Uptown at all?
Hopefully, this is the moment, right?
Yeah,
the moment that everyone's been waiting for. But I think it takes proper planning and marketing, as does everything. The transportation is key right now. The Wilson Station is getting redone. Lawrence is next.
Mm-hmm.
Park and ride's going to be important for Uptown, and then just choices. An entertainment district works when you have good entertainment venues surviving in tandem. If you don't go to this show, you go to that one. If you don't eat here, you go there. If you don't shop here, you go there. It takes all of that for an entertainment district to work. It's different in nature, and I think it's a little different in customer than, say, the Wrigley thing.
Mm-hmm.
It has merit. You have great venues already operating there, as you said. The Uptown's the last piece.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, what's happening this summer at Wrigley, there's like 8 concerts at Wrigley this season. And it's like a concert season
right
now. And that it increases every year. Usually it was just like one concert a year, and that would be it. There's like 8 or 9 this year, and there were like 4 last year, including 2 nights of Pearl Jam. And you know, big acts are right. playing there. You know, realistically, if one were to sink the money into getting the Uptown going and getting that neighborhood, you know, up and vibrant again, what kind of, you know, with a 42,000 seat place, Wrigley Field, with the really big names playing there, just, you know, a couple of miles north is the Uptown, mile and a half, a couple of miles north is the Uptown. What realistically, what kind of artists would play at the Uptown? It wouldn't be that great, would it? I mean,
it's your up-and-coming artist, mm-hmm. or it's your revival artist who is on their
nostalgia to her?
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's really been the market idea for the Uptown for some time. And I think you saw the Rosemont Theater get built when they knew the Uptown wasn't going to happen. And now we talk about maybe the Rosemont being demolished. There is a certain market
that is
perfect for that seat count.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. And then you want to talk about an entertainment district. My God, what they did in Rosemont is stunning. It's unbelievable. I host a film club every month, and I do it at the Movie Co.
Nice.
The Movie Co. Theater. And we use one of the big upstairs theaters, the deluxe, beautiful big upstairs theater.
And wouldn't you like to do that at the Uptown behind a real facade?
Come on.
Is that a thing?
Are you
real
kidding?
Facade?
I was lucky enough to introduce and host a screening of Phantasm. They re-released Phantasm, the horror film from 1979, and it's totally remastered. They cleaned it up. It was amazing, and I got to host it. So I stood on the stage at the Music Box, which was really, I've been on the stage at the Music Box before, but it was really fun. I got to introduce like one of my favorite films of all time at this beautiful, you know, the Music Box is a beautiful theater.
Yes.
And that it was so much fun. I mean, I love doing my Movie Co. thing. I really do. And the people at Movie Co. are fantastic. And you know, I get to pick the movies, and a lot of people show up, and we have a great time. In fact, I'm showing Reservoir Dogs 25th anniversary on March 7th.
March 7th at the Movie Co.
That's right.
Very good.
So, but it was just something about being inside the Music Box and in the history of that theater, and it being like one of my favorite, a seminal movie of my childhood that I got to introduce to a large auditorium of people in a classic theater and then watch it. It was just, people don't really understand how special that is.
It's different, and you know, it's going to be in your memory forever, right?
I want to throw this out to the listeners here. If you guys want to send in texts or call in at 312-981-7200, we were just discussing, Andy and I were discussing off the air, some of the neighborhood theaters that we would go to. What about you guys? 312-981-7200, if you have some memories about your favorite beautiful movie palaces that used to be all over the city in the suburbs. And we want to hear from you anywhere on the north side, south side, east side, whatever. 312-981-7200. Talk and text for your favorite beautiful neighborhood theaters. And I remember when Plitt actually took over a lot of the theaters. And in fact, the screening room inside the Chicago Theater on the seventh floor inside the Chicago Theater was the Plitt screening room when I started reviewing movies in 85.
Wow.
So I was familiar with the Plitt company a lot, and they owned a lot of theaters in Chicago for a while.
The Little Chicago, that space was called, was for rehearsal. And
that's what they called it, Little Chicago?
The Little Chicago. You were in the Little Chicago.
I never knew that. It was always the Plitt screening room when I was going there.
Did they still have free long-distance phone and cigarette smoking in there when you were there?
No, it was a bare bones. It was just a bare bones screening room at that point. You take a rickety elevator. It was every time we get on the elevator, it would be like me and Roy Leonard would get on the elevator and go, I don't know if we're going to make it up to the seventh floor. You'd close the gate. It was just crazy. And then like you could get out like on the fifth floor, and the elevator would open up, and you were in the balcony of the Chicago Theater, which was so cool. I used to do it every time I'd go to a screening. I'd get out on the sixth floor or whatever, and just go out and check out the balcony. And I remember I went in, and I ended up watching. I watched most of Purple Rain.
Wow.
From way up in the balcony. I was the only person up there.
Nice.
Yeah.
The elevator really hasn't changed that much. It's still just slightly larger than a phone booth.
Yeah. Yeah. So Plitt came in and took over a lot of those theaters. Correct.
Yeah. So if we go back to stage show, organ, orchestra, all of that, and the silent film, things progress, right? And technology changes. And the first thing that takes a big bite out of movie palace audiences is radio.
Ah!
People want to stay home and listen to their radio serial. So if there was a big cliffhanger on a popular show, they would actually break into the show at the movie palace and tell you what
was
going on.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's great.
They didn't want to lose you. Radio took the first bite, TV took the second bite.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we figure out that people will still come to see a movie without the stage show, without the organ, without the orchestra, without the movie palace.
Yeah.
But the Uptown adjusted over time. It did film for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And then volunteers actually petitioned Plitt to say, look, you've got this full working stage. Why aren't you using it? So that's where you got movie by day.
Concerts
at night.
Yeah. And a lot of big acts played there. Prince played there. As we said, Genesis, The Dead played there.
Rod Stewart,
yeah.
Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
All the big names that were coming up. Bruce Springsteen, huge shows there.
There was a period of time in the 70s when They hosted a ton of amazing acts at the Uptown.
Right. And for a lot of those bands, that was like an intimate show because they had already done stadiums. So you talk about doing stadiums or doing large outdoor venues, right. Soldier Field, Wrigley Field. You still might get a band like the Stones who come play the Aragon because they want to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Listen, Andy, hang on. We got to take a break. We got people calling in too with their neighborhood theater thoughts, and we'll talk more about it. And we'll give you all the details on the lecture for Wednesday, the 22nd. It's $5 for the public. It's free for CFA members, CAF members, and it's at the CAF 224 South Michigan Avenue in the lecture hall. We'll take a break. And we'll come back with more on 720 WGN. It's Grateful Dead live at the Uptown Theater, the beautiful Uptown Theater in Chicago. That was in February of 1981. When did it close in 1981?
Later, and I think Jay Giles was the last band.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Wow. God, Jay Giles in 1981, they were huge. They had Freeze Frame was out at that time.
It was big.
Yeah.
That was the last concert.
Wow. So tell us, this, by the way, we're talking with Andy Pierce, who's one of the co-founders of Friends of the Uptown Theater, and also a member of the Theater Historical Society of America. But tell us about the lecture on Wednesday. And it is $5 for the public, and it's at 12:15 Wednesday afternoon at the CAF, which is at 224 South Michigan. Tell us about it.
And I'd recommend coming early because I'm going to spin a lot of images before we start. I've been doing this 19 years now. I've got a lot to share.
Yeah.
So a lot of the fun stuff I'm going to throw on the screen beforehand. When we get into the lecture, we're going to show the building from construction to today. And I'm going to walk you through it so you'll feel like you know the building, whether or not you've ever been in
it. So tons of visuals. It's going to be like a virtual tour.
This theater is the most photographed theater in the world, even before digital cameras. And really, in the time of digital cameras, it hasn't really been available for tours and photography that much.
Right.
So most of these are the large format, black and white, beautiful 1925 photography.
Well, I was just looking. You brought in the Balvin and Katz magazine. And, you know, this is from 1977, this issue that you brought in.
Right. That's a Theater Historical Society publication they did in 1977. It's been reprinted many times. It's out of print now. But we
the
hope
pictures
to
in here are unbelievable.
Yes.
I mean, it's just breathtaking to look at this theater. And to think that you just mentioned off the air that there were 31 movie palaces at one point in Chicago.
Chicago had at least 20 major movie palaces.
Right.
And, you know, to some people, their neighborhood cinema was a movie palace, right?
Yeah.
Because it brought you above the ordinary.
Yeah.
It had air conditioning. It had carpet. It had drapes. Maybe you didn't. But we had 20 major movie palaces.
It's funny because, you know, you look at some of the old pictures of like, the Loop area and all the theaters, and they all had air conditioning. Like, they had, there was, like, one of the...
Oh, yeah.
With the logo with the frost on it, you know, with the ice on the... it was a big draw.
Balvin and Katz opened their theaters fully air-conditioned. A lot of the competition didn't have air conditioning.
Yeah.
And that was one of their many advantages.
Yeah. Amazing. So it's going to be a great lecture, and you're going to get to see tons of amazing stuff. It'll be like a virtual tour.
Virtual tour of the Uptown.
Yeah.
Question and answer. You know, anything you've ever wanted to ask about the Uptown, let's do it.
Okay, great. And it's this Wednesday, the 22nd. It's at 12:15, $5 to the public. It's in the lecture hall at the Chicago Architecture Foundation, which is 224 South Michigan, 224 South Michigan. And get there early, and Andy will give you a great virtual tour. All right, here's Patrick on WGN. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
All
great
right.
Great topic, man. Great topic. Man, you are taking me back. I'm serious, man. I grew up by the Normal and the Roseland, so I would go to those theaters on a regular basis.
Yeah, yeah.
I went to, I don't know if you're familiar with the Hamilton. I think it was in South Shore and Hyde Park.
Yeah, I think I only went there a couple of times, one or two times, yeah.
I saw my first Bruce Lee film there when I was like nine at the Hamilton. I also saw Which Way Is Up at the Hamilton, you know. But
I saw Which Way Is Up at the Roosevelt downtown.
Okay.
Yeah.
I never made it to the Roosevelt, but I've gone to the State Lake. I sat through, it was Enter the Dragon and Cleopatra Jones on a double feature, and I sat through Enter the Dragon four times just because I'm a Bruce Lee nut as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Chicago Theater, we would go see James Bond movies at the Chicago, the United Artists, on my 15th birthday, I saw Friday the 13th in 3D on my 15th birthday, and my sisters and I saw Jaws 3D at the United Artists.
Yeah.
Wow.
I used to always go to the McVickers because the McVickers showed the best kung fu movies,
yeah.
But the Oriental, the first time I went there, because they were known for the kung fu movies as well. First time I went there, I was 12 years old. It was a Shaw Brothers film called Duel of the Iron Fist. And at this point, you know, it's pretty ghetto in there. People are drinking.
Oh, yeah.
And fighting.
Yeah, yeah.
The sound went out during the movie. Sound went out for a good 10 minutes.
Oh, man.
So you're just watching action. People are losing their mind.
Yeah.
I look up at the ceiling, and it had a beautiful, I mean, it's a beautiful theater inside there. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
I'm looking up, and this something goes floating across the ceiling. And because it was going against the light of the projector, it created an optical illusion like it was floating in slow motion. It goes through the screen, creates a huge hole. I get splashed. It was somebody's vodka bottle. They threw their vodka bottle through the screen.
Classy.
Classic,
that
yeah.
That hole stayed in the screen for at least 5 years.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. At that point.
I was 12 years old when I went,
yeah.
And I think I went again when I was 17, and they finally sewed it up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Amazing.
I mean, I remember all those.
Yeah. All right, hey, Patrick, I got to...
The Devon.
Yeah, the Devon Theater. I remember the Devon. Yeah. Patrick, I got to run.
All right, man. You take care.
All right, buddy.
Weekend.
Take care. There you go. All right. Let's talk with Lou, who we know from the Green Mill. Hey, Lou.
Hey. Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah.
Remember that time we were on the show, we had some Green Mill guys on there, and so thanks again for that. That was great.
Oh, yeah, of course.
How's the mill, Lou?
Oh, never better. We had a show tonight with the Alan Gresick Swing Show. And I passed by the Uptown, and I was thinking, I went by the stage door, modest little stage door right there by Magnolia and Lawrence, and I thought, I wonder how many thousands of people came through this door.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's the first thing you think about.
Yeah. Now, you wanted to mention movies that were filmed at the Uptown, Lou?
Yeah, there was, Transformers 3. I'd seen that. They had taken, it looked like, some of the seats and turned them on their side and unbolted them from the floor. Is that right? Do you know anything about that, Eddie?
Those seats, I think, are left over from some Riviera remodeling at some point. They've been stored on the Uptown stage for a while. But there's a lot of props they brought in, too.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. And heavy security, I remember that, because Paramount was out there. I think they were watching. But the doors were open, and I snuck a peek in there, and it still looks beautiful.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Lou, thanks, man.
Backdraft.
Yeah. What? I'm sorry?
Backdraft was filmed there.
Oh, Backdraft, yes. Oh, yeah, Backdraft had this big scene that was filmed.
Backdraft, Home Alone 2, and, I Love Trouble with Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts,
yeah.
And Nick Nolte.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, I didn't know that. It was filmed within the theater, I see.
All right, Lou, okay. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Take care, real quick. Couple of texts, Andy. 773 area code says, here's an Uptown memory. In 1980, I did not have tickets to a sold-out Bob Marley show. I figured I'd show up and try to score some tickets there, and then I luckily ran into a friend who was working for Jam. He invited my little brother and me to come in, and we got to stand on the stage for an hour plus for the sound check with Bob Marley. It was just us and the band is one of my favorite Uptown memories.
Oh, that's beautiful. That was shortly before Marley passed.
Yep.
And it's really great that he played there. And there's a lot of people who remember it, and if you look on YouTube, you can see a video of it.
Margaret says, does the theater society he is part of offer any other tours of historic theaters in Chicago?
You know, we certainly used to. The headquarters recently moved to Pittsburgh against a lot of members' wishes.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get a great tour at Chicago Theater, from the Chicago Theater, the Oriental Theater from Broadway in Chicago, and the Auditorium Theater from the folks at the Auditorium. So definitely seek out those theaters. Earlier we were talking about Open House Chicago with Chicago Architecture Foundation, which happens in the fall. If you look at the Uptown Theater Facebook page, we already have that date posted. So you want to take advantage of all those tours and
great.
Have fun.
And if people want more information, there's a Facebook page that they can give them, like a Facebook page and the website and all that stuff.
Oh, sure. We're really easy to find. If you Google Uptown Theater, you'll find us right away. UptownTheater.com. On Facebook, it is The Uptown Theater.
All right. Listen, thank you so much for coming down, Andy. I really appreciate it.
I enjoy it.
Everybody,
thank you.
Come down Wednesday, 12:15, for a great lecture, a virtual tour. $5 for the public at 224 South Michigan Avenue. Andy, always, it's a pleasure having you in. Let's not do this 11 years from now. We'll do it earlier.
Anytime.
Okay, cool.
Thanks.
All right, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up in 5 seconds.